15, 16 degrees right by the coast, but move inland with some sunshine and we're up to 18 or 19 degrees. Sunday may well start on a bit of a grey note, but I think it should brighten up quite nicely, although again, North Sea coast will probably stay greyer and cooler than elsewhere, but most places enjoying another sunny day.
Thanks very much, Jay. Well, now on BBC Radio 4, we round off our Book of the Week, Maggie and Me by Damien Barr, a memoir about growing up gay in working-class Scotland in the 1980s. Though Margaret Thatcher was a hated figure in the steelworking community Damien grew up in, her strength spoke to him as a vulnerable young boy, and he found in her an unlikely heroine.
My dad shows me how to gamble. Cards and dice are to him what bottles and cans are to my mum. Only he hides it better, and sometimes wins. Anyway, I'm taking a gamble now. We're doing our UCA forms and it feels like I'm writing a letter to my future. Miss Campbell oversees the application process. I've already decided I'm going to study journalism. I want to tell and sell stories. There aren't many journalism degrees, but the BA at Napier University in Edinburgh is my top choice. In my UCA statement, I highlight my experience as captain of all the school quiz teams, debating and public speaking, and my leading role in the Save El Dorado campaign. I wrote to Points of View and organised petitions to keep the doomed BBC soap going. I do it all with semicolons. Mrs. Kennedy bustles into the English staff room with our creative writing portfolios under her arm. She turns to me first. After 6 years of straight A's, I expect only praise. I have submitted a poem called Snake Eyes about a man who stakes everything on one roll of the dice because of one look from another man across the table, which transmits a signal only he can decode. I dare Mrs. Kennedy to call my bluff. I won't let you submit this, she says, dropping my poem on the table. Why? I dare her. Because I wouldn't want your grades to be affected by... Maybe you should discuss this with Miss Campbell. So I take the incriminating poem to Miss Campbell in the guidance room. She reads my poem silently, but her face says everything. Right, she says. I agree with Mrs. Kennedy. You can't submit this. Why? It's just, Damien, it's too personal. The guidance room is a torture chamber of the unsaid. I know, and she knows, and neither of us dares say it out loud, because then it'll be true. Miss, I say, formalising this moment, I think I'm gay. She puts the poem down slowly. No, she says, as if denying me permission to go to the toilet, you're not. Yes, I am. This is not what I wanted for you, Damien. This is going to make your life very difficult, more difficult than it is already. No. Her face is set. It's a face I've seen before when she's about to suspend a problem pupil. She stands up and opens the door. Out. I don't want to hear any more about it. I run straight to Mrs. Shaw in the computer room. Nothing can stop me now, I've said it out loud. I feel freed up by the telling, unburdened. Mrs. Shaw is kinder, tells me about something called Clause 28, says Miss Campbell wanted to help but was legally prevented from promoting homosexuality. And I realise they've already anticipated this, discussed it. I tell her I'm going to tell my mum. I'm going to tell everybody. I'm never going to lie about myself again. She cuddles me, then holds me at arm's length and looks at me hard and wishes me luck. I turn the poem in. I win the gamble. I get my A. I have always relied on the kindness of teachers. It's the 12th of October, 2009. I'm now 33 years old. I've made it back to Brighton, where I live with my own Mr. Wright and our pet chickens. I'm sitting on the pebbly beach opposite the Grand Hotel. TV crews are rehearsing spontaneous remarks for their reports on the 25th anniversary of the Brighton bombing. The sea dazzles with dancing sun pennies. I still can't believe I really live here. Walking along the seafront, past the Grand, you can easily identify room 629, where the timer detonated at 2:54 a.m. on the 12th of October 1984. Famous for needing fiendishly little sleep, Maggie was still awake in her suite when the bomb went off. She was probably working on her big speech for the next day, which was also her birthday, and I like to imagine she allowed some small bit of herself to feel excited. In that explosive moment, 5 people were killed and 34 seriously injured, but she was completely unharmed. Minutes after the blast, she emerged, Terminator-like, from the rubble with dust clouds billowing around her. I watched it all in black and white on the portable telly in that flat in Kerfin. Looking merely mildly inconvenienced as she left the half-destroyed hotel, Maggie paused to give a determined interview to the BBC. You hear about these atrocities, you don't expect them to happen to you. Life must go on as usual, she said. Indeed, it must. Does. Has. Life in Brighton is busy. Most days I commute into London to whatever paper I'm working on, and most evenings I arrive home late, the express from Victoria rarely all that express. My last visit to Scotland changed my life. I was at Lancaster University studying English, but wanted to get even further from home. So far, it would stop being home forever. The English department offered a scholarship to the University of Texas at Austin. I went for the interview without even looking at an atlas and got it. They covered travel and tuition, but I needed something to live on. So I rang my old teachers and they put the word out to their friends, and within a week I was summoned back to Brannock High School for a meeting with a lawyer. His name was Mr. Douglas. He looked like a friendly vicar in a pinstripe suit. So, Mr. Barr, how much do you need? He asked, reading over my CV. Sorry? How much do you need? I laughed nervously, wishing I hadn't worn denim dungarees. I need £5,000, I said, a sum twice my grant and more than I could imagine. My client will give you £10,000. He was already writing a cheque. I couldn't believe it. Thank you, I started. Don't thank me, interrupted Mr. Douglas, already putting the lid back on his fountain pen. Thank my client. But who is your client? My client wishes to remain anonymous. All he asks is that you write him a letter each term relating your progress. It is a specific condition of his gift that you do not even attempt to find out who he is. Understood? I nodded and stood. I almost bowed. He handed me the cheque and it didn't turn to air. Mr. Douglas is long dead, but every now and then I write a letter to my mysterious benefactor. I've never had one back. I've travelled lots since then, so has Heather. She's taught English all around the world and we joke that her international students have a lovely Scottish accent. Mark didn't make it to university. He was more than smart enough, but it wasn't for him, he said. He got a job as a care assistant instead. Mobile phone reception is patchy on Brighton Beach, but a couple of bars of signal finally blow in from the sea and I get through to Heather and we agree that yes, it's been far too long, and arrange a visit for the following week. Motherwell Station, and there she is, leaning on the old navy blue Cavalier she got from her mum. It's years since I've seen Heather, 2 or 3 at least. She smiles when I explain the flowers I'm carrying are for Mark, not her. Of course they are, she says. I'll drive. Soon we're coming up to the Craig, only it's not there anymore. There are no cooling towers puffing clouds into the sky like old biddies at a bus stop. No giant diggers. Even the great steel gates, padlocked forever in 1992, are gone. Where's the Craig? Gone, she says, dry as ever, gesturing with one hand as if she made it disappear. I can see that. Echoes of the protest. Maggie's broken promise. All those men. My dad's last shift. Now we're passing Caer Hardy Memorial Primary School. I remember the Polaroid that Mr. Baker took of me and Mark and Brian on our last day. I wonder where it is now. Brian drowned, aged 18, at a party on a loch. His funeral was our first and only class reunion. Me and him were the last to learn to swim. Down the road is Logan's house. I imagine him in there, fists clenched. I close my eyes. I used to pray to Jesus to get my mum and dad back together, to strike Logan down and make me normal. Amen. A couple of years ago, Logan got jumped. They actually kicked his head in, and now he carries around an aneurysm. Tick tock. Tick tock. The police never caught the men that did it. We drive on in silence for a bit. Soon, Heather slows to a stop. "Don't forget Mark's flowers," she says, tightening the handbrake. I see him now. Blue eyes, straight ahead. Toes edging over the highest diving board. Fearless. Determined. Mark had been trying to commit suicide for years, then promising not to do it again. He couldn't see a way to be happy. He couldn't see a way to be him. Not long after we both turned 23, he took one last leap into the unknown. Someday my pain. Someday my pain. At his funeral, I was asked to give a eulogy. So I talked about how much I loved Mark, how he struggled to be gay in a world of bigots, how I would miss him. Heather beamed at me through tears from the front row of the church, the three of us together again. In a strange way, Mark would have loved it. With the wild wolves around you. I'm the only boy still alive in Mr. Baker's Polaroid. Be strong, Maggie told us all. Get educated. Get away. That's what she said. I listened. Heather listened. Mark didn't. And maybe he couldn't. Yes, Maggie, you snatched all the milk and sent my teachers out to strike. Yes, you smashed the miners, closed the Craig, and took away our second sunset. Yes, you made millions unemployed, then cut their benefits. Yes, you privatised gas and electricity, so we ended up with a hungry meter, going to bed with our clothes on so we didn't have to dress for school in the cold. Yes, you created Clause 28 to prohibit the teaching of homosexuality, which wasn't very successful in my case. And yes, you devised the poll tax, so I got the most exciting modern studies lesson ever, thanks to Tommy Sheridan. Yes, you gave me choices when I needed chances. You did all that. Yet you also saved my life. You were different, like me, and you had to fight to be yourself. You made a hero of the individual, and I did my homework to impress you. You hated where I was from, and I did too, so you made it okay for me to run away and never look back. You offered me certainty, however grim, when I had none at home. You threw me an escape ladder. I wish I could have seen you in person, just once. I wanted to watch you walk through the world before you left it. And if you'd stumbled, I like to think I would have rushed forward to catch you, to show you the kindness that you never showed me. I'd like you to owe me a favour. I want to show you that I did it. I want you to be proud of me, my other mother.
Damien Barr was reading from his memoir Maggie and Me. It was abridged by Sian Preece and produced by Allegra McElroy. And you can catch up with all the previous episodes of Maggie and Me by going to the Book of the Week programme page on the Radio 4 website, bbc.co.uk/radio4. In a moment, the late night shipping forecast. To take us there, here's Sailing By.